Smithville.
Good morning. A brighter day is here. Good morning. May we bring you cheer.
We've got time. We've got tunes. We've got time, tunes, and temperature.
Get up and go. It's today, you know. On KSCO Radio.
And with the old time tunes temperature music, the ghost of Vernon Berlin still lives here at Radio Free Santa Cruz KSCO. I'm Charlie Friedman. It's 2 hours of news talk straight ahead here on Community Talk Radio for the Monterey Bay. Second there, it almost sounded like the opening to The Sound of Music. Always reminds me of the Mad Magazine takeoff. The hills are alive with the sound of money. Charlie Friedman here, taking over from MZ on this particular Saturday. Today, for those of you who are interested, and I'm sure that includes just about everybody, Michael Zwirling has returned to his roots. That's right. He is back in New York right now. And Rosemary was kind enough to give me a call, asked me to come in and sit in for him today on the Saturday special, and I am only too glad to do so. Going to give the phone numbers right off the bat today, because what we've got in store for you is 2 hours of whatever you'd like to talk about. We can make this just a couple of hours worth of news talk here on the program. We can talk about the recent demise of Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, for which everybody who has any pretense to being a proper person would be extremely glad of. I mean, this guy was a scoundrel of the first water. There's an understatement. So we got him. We can talk about that. We can talk about the recent primary election and the fallout from that, the matchups that we're going to have in November. We can talk a little political inside baseball. I'll tell you what I mean by that in a moment. We can talk about immigration, education, you call it. The phone number here at the radio station, if you want to join me on the air, is 479-1080. That is 479-1080. And also you can reach us at 477-1340. All lines obviously are open right now. We've just begun the show, so this is a good time to call. You'll get right through. Our fax number, if you'd like to send some information, is 475-2967. Okay. I said inside baseball. Political inside baseball is what I was speaking of. Here's what I mean by that. I don't know how many of you have been following this story or not, but for the past several months, our friends in the Democratic Party have been trying to make a lot of political hay out of scandal stories. And it is reasonable and natural that they should do this. I'm not criticizing them for that. That would be like criticizing the wind for blowing. It's just normal and natural when you have the majority leader of the House, Tom DeLay, forced to resign by improprieties. When you have Randy Duke Cunningham down in Southern California, actually convicted of accepting tremendous amounts of money and bribes. I mean, this was a story that took all of us by surprise. People who admired and people who disliked Cunningham both never suspected that the man would turn out to be a 14-carat gold-plated scoundrel. And right now he's beginning an 8-year stretch getting a striped suntan, which is exactly where he belongs. So the Democrats figured, hey, let's make an issue out of the culture of corruption. Let's pin this to the Republicans. Well, there's a problem. It seems that a Democratic congressman from New Orleans, Louisiana, by the name of William Jefferson, recently had FBI agents in his office who found $90,000 in cash there, which he has no explanation for. And Nancy Pelosi, the Democratic floor leader in the House, is attempting, and she's being consistent. She's really, I admire her for this. She is attempting to preserve her issue by getting dealing very severely with Jefferson. She wants him taken off, at least temporarily, the very powerful House Ways and Means Committee, where he sits. And she's having a hell of a time getting this past her own caucus. It's not the kind of a decision she can make by herself, you see. She has to get all of the Democratic membership of the House to go along with her. Well, she's the Democratic leader. It seems reasonable that she would be able to do this, but it isn't working that way. For one thing, out of 200-odd Democrats in Congress, 44 belong to the Black Caucus, and they are placing race ahead of ethics in this particular thing. They're standing firm with Jefferson. Jefferson himself is thumbing his nose at his at his leadership, Miss Pelosi, and saying, no, I'm not going to step down from the Ways and Means Committee. It's a sidebar, but it kind of it reminds me years ago that when the Abscam thing went down. I don't know how many of you remember that. It was in the late 70s, about 1978, 79. There was a congressman from Florida. He was a Republican. Richard Kelly, and the FBI actually got this guy on videotape shoving $50,000 into the pockets of this trench coat, and he's saying, does it show? Does it show? He ran for re-election, wound up coming in fourth in a field of four for his primary, so he got his just desserts. But anyway, now this guy, Bill Jefferson, is pulling the same nonsense, and who knows what will happen, but he's certainly bucking his House leadership, even when Ms. Pelosi's trying to make this corruption thing something you can pin on the Republicans. So she's cruising on some rather difficult seas there, and I feel sorry for her. I really do, and I'm not being sarcastic there. She is behaving admirably, and she's getting stymied. Not only that, there's something else going on in the Democratic leadership. The assistant Democratic leader is Steny Hoyer from Maryland. He's a moderate, you know, well, not moderate. He's a liberal Democrat, but he's a mainline liberal Democrat. He's not some kind of a screwball. John Murtha of Pennsylvania, who has, it seems, divorced himself from reality over the past few years, has, in a classic example of counting your chickens before they hatch, has decided when the Democrats take control of the House, as a result of the elections later this year, he intends to run against Hoyer for the position of majority leader. Pelosi, of course, would become speaker if the Democrats assume a majority, and then they would need to choose a new floor leader, and Murtha now is announcing, I'm going to run for that. Whereas Hoyer had figured, hey, you know, I will accede to this office, or succeed to this office, which under normal circumstances is what would happen in either the Republican or Democratic parties. Now, I understand all of this is rather arcane, and that's why I called it inside baseball. This is the kind of thing that we political junkies pay very close attention to. But right now, the disarray on the Democratic side in the House far exceeds anything you'll find among the Republicans, and watching this fall out, quite literally, is going to be a very interesting exercise over the next few months. If you have any observations on this, or you can offer anything additional, or maybe some speculations, call me up and we'll talk about it, 479-1080. Of course, the big story from the last week, well, two big stories. In California, one big story was we had our primary election. We now know that Phil Angelides will be the Democrat who goes up against Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger in November. Is there anybody out there who honestly thinks Angelides has any chance of winning this one? Now, Steve Westley might possibly have had a chance to win for a couple of reasons. First of all, Westley has barrels and barrels of his own money to spend. His personal fortune is $220 million. You remember a few years ago, 94, when Michael Huffington, the congressman from Santa Barbara, ran for senator, and everybody was saying, oh, this guy is spending all the money in the world. Michael Huffington had a personal fortune of 70, that is $70 million. Steve Westley, 220 million, that's more than three times as much money. In the primary alone, Westley spent $35 million, which was as much as Huffington spent on both the primary and general back in 1994. I mean, we're talking about an immense amount of money here. Phil Angelides finds some developer named Soskopoulos, as I recall, who contributes something like $9 million to various allied groups to finance his campaign, and everybody's pointing fingers at Angelides and saying, oh, he took all this money from this guy. All he was trying to do was to remain competitive when he was being buried under a ton of money. Now, I'll tell you what, I'm getting a little fed up with this. If we're going to make the rules the way they are now, if we're going to cling to this idea that, well, you can't accept more than $22,000 from a particular source, then why don't we just pass a law that says unless you can finance your own campaign, you can't run for public office. Right now, you have to do it through the back door. By that, I mean you have to set up these quasi-allied groups. Like in the national elections, we call them 527s. And in the 2004 election, most of the money that was spent went through these 527s that were set up under the campaign finance law that our friends McCain and Feingold foisted off on us. What a mess that was. That was going to take the money out of politics, right? Yeah, and I got real estate in Florida for you, too, and a bridge in Brooklyn. Anyway, here in California, wound up with Angelides barely managing to eke out a tiny, tiny victory over Steve Westley. But Westley, politically, was somewhat to the right of Angelides. Angelides, just a down-the-line liberal Democrat. Westley, on the other hand, a little more centrist. The big issue, taxes. Westley said no tax increase. Angelides is calling, quite frankly and forthrightly, for a tax increase. The voters of California just got through turning down two statewide measures that would have had something to do with spending. One was Prop 82, the Rob Reiner's preschool thing, another soak the rich proposal. Hey, we don't have to pay for it. Let them pay for it. You know, the rich can leave. And if they do, we'll have killed the goose that lays the golden eggs. The people of California turned that down. But even more significantly, they also turned down the other ballot proposition that was on statewide. That was a library bond measure. And the question is, there was no organized campaign against that proposition. That was number 81. There was no organized opposition. But it lost. Why did it lose? Because the people of California understand that a couple of years ago, the state of California nearly went bankrupt, and right now they are in no mood to assume further bonded indebtedness, even for something as worthwhile and praiseworthy as libraries. That tells you something. It should certainly tell you that a politician like Phil Angelides, who says we need to raise taxes again, is not going to gain traction. Charlie Friedman's prediction, Angelides will lose to Governor Schwarzenegger by 1 million votes or more. It's not even going to be close, folks. He is going to get blown out of the water. Now, the question is, will Schwarzenegger be able to win by enough to be able to pull in down-ballot Republican candidates? For example, for Lieutenant Governor, we now have a matchup between Senator Tom McClintock and Insurance Commissioner John Garamendi. Now, Garamendi, the Democrat, just came off two terms as Insurance Commissioner. And interestingly, the current Lieutenant Governor, Cruz Bustamante, is now the Democratic nominee for Insurance Commissioner. So the two of them did this kind of a trapeze act. You know, you catch my swing and I'll catch yours. My guess is that both of them will lose. The last time this happened was in 1958 when on the Republican side, Bill Noland, then senator for California, decided he wanted to come back here and run for governor. He bumped the Republican governor, Goodwin Knight, into the Senate primary. And it wound up in November that both of them not only lost, but lost terribly. And frankly, I think Mr. Garamendi and Mr. Bustamante are both riding for a fall this time. That would mean that you'd have a Republican governor and a Republican lieutenant governor, Tom McClintock. The next office is Secretary of State. There's a Republican incumbent, somebody we know very well from here, Bruce McPherson, local boy. And he's been doing a fantastic job, had no opposition in the Republican primary, and will probably be a favorite for reelection. So there's one more Republican win. After that, you run into trouble. The Republicans did not nominate their best candidate for state treasurer. They nominated Claude Parrish instead of Keith Richmond. As a result, Bill Lockyer, the Democratic Attorney General, will almost certainly win that one. For state controller, Abel Maldonado would have been my choice, but we have Tony Strickland running. He's a good guy, very competent guy. The Democrats are running John Chang. That will be one to watch. That'll be an interesting one to watch. And then the really interesting one is Attorney General. The Republicans have as their candidate state senator Chuck Pushigian of Fresno, a competent guy. The Democrat is Jerry Brown. That's right, the same Jerry Brown who a number of years ago was a rather zany governor of California, and since then has reinvented himself into a very effective, competent, and capable mayor of the city of Oakland. So it'll be interesting to see which Jerry Brown the voters of California perceive in this election. Will it be Governor Moonbeam, or will it be this this mayor of Oakland who has actually shown a significant record of accomplishment? We'll all be interested in seeing that one. Other things in the primary election, locally, Measure E over in Watsonville. Unfortunately, Tony Campos got reelected supervisor. Neil Coonerty just blew out his opposition for supervisor in Santa Cruz. How many of you were happy about the idea that virtually no state countywide office was opposed for reelection, and they were all appointed? Appointed county clerk, appointed sheriff. You know what happens there? The person who's holding the office resigns, and then the county board of supervisors names a successor, and at the next election, that person gets to run as an incumbent and draws no opposition. This is a very, very dangerous situation. I was appalled when I got my sample ballot and saw that none of the county officers were opposed. The only race was for county superintendent of schools. And there's going to be a runoff. But, gee whiz, have we gotten so one way in this county that we have one-party politics now? We just, you know, the county board of supervisors can name who it wants to these positions, and we don't even say a thing about it? I wonder. Want to talk about it? 479-1080 is the phone number. You can call up. Billy Sunshine did, and he's on the air right now. At least I think he is. Come on. Tick. There we go. Hi, Billy. How you doing?
Well, I'm fine. But, you know, I just remembered that you know, if I don't say the right thing, you like to hang up on me. So I'll do it first. Bye, Charlie.
That was fun. Okay. Yeah, he's all upset because the last time he called, he was ranting and raving about fascists and just, you know, behaving like a complete shaved ape. So, I invited him to play by the, you know, to play by civilized rules, and he wouldn't do it. So, yeah, I 86'd him. And you know what? I'm still not sorry. We have another caller, Malcolm. He'll be joining us in a second. All rest of the lines are open. 479-1080 is the phone number. Malcolm, good morning, sir.
Hi, Charlie. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you.
I've got some statistics that might be of interest to you and perhaps to some of your listeners.
Oh, really? Dealing with what?
Well, this is the guide to Congress, the Congressional Quarterly, published by the U.S. Government Printing Office.
Yes.
And it's the rundown since they started keeping records back in the 1800s on the Democrats and Republicans who were disqualified for the Senate and the House, expelled, censured, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Put in jail. Okay.
I guess the most recent expulsion was Ozzie Myers of Philadelphia back in about 1979, 80, 81, something like that.
Well, I can't be helpful on specifics, but the overall numbers.
Yeah.
Up through 1998, there have been 89 Democrats who had been disqualified, expelled, or censured. And 38 Republicans, the ratio of 2.3 to 2.34, in favor of the Democrats. In other words, their lead over the Republicans in this evaluation, if you want to call it that way. And in the period from 1992 to 1998, there were 10 people who were expelled and whatever. 9 of them were Democrats. 1 was a Republican. All 10 are in the slammer right now. So in the last several years, the Demos have led the Republicans by about 9-1.
That's interesting.
And this is not newspapers crap.
No, I understand. This is the congressional record. It's
yes.
Just a flat statement of objective facts.
Yes.
I did not know that it was quite that lopsided. I was, as you were talking about that, Malcolm, I was thinking to myself, now what would cause that? Now there are objective factors. For example, we all remember that from 1954 to 1994, that's a period of 40 years, the Democrats controlled the House. When you are the party in power for that long, even if the Republicans have been in power for that long, I hate to admit it, but it's the truth, you would have seen Republicans getting caught in the thing. That's what happens when a party's in power too long. They begin to play fast and loose with the rules, or at least some people will. And so I'm, you know, at the risk of being devil's advocate for the Democrats, who obviously I'm no Democrat, but...
Well, let me just say this, Johnny. These go back to just after the Civil War. I mean, this is not last week's news. This is the track record for a very long time.
So that goes back even to when the Republicans used to run the House, back in the late...
The mantle has shifted several times during that whole era.
Fascinating. Well, let me ask you this, Malcolm. What conclusions do you draw from this statistic that you've dug out?
That's a good question.
Are you willing to say here that you feel that Democrats are more predisposed towards corrupt conduct than our Republicans?
Yes. Didn't have to hesitate on that.
Okay. And well, given the objective facts you've just presented, I think you can make that statement defensively.
Well, anyway, it throws some hard numbers into the discussion. It'd be interesting to hear what some of your other listeners have to say about it.
I am so glad you called with that. That is really very interesting. Thank you.
Well, enjoy your hosting. And when you see Michael Z, tell him that Michael Z did the right thing by putting you on.
Well, bless your heart. I do appreciate that.
Drive careful.
Ah, you got that right. Thank you very kindly, sir.
Bye-bye.
That's Malcolm. And that means we have open lines all up and down the board right now. I'm going to go ahead and take our first break. This looks like a good time to do it, and it will give you an opportunity to fight your way to the telephone and do the proper thing. 479-1080 is the number to call. All lines are open. You'll get through right away. 479-1080 or 477-1340. And you can join me, Charlie Friedman, here on KSCO. Be back in about 3 or 4 minutes.
Hi, I'm Adolfo Garcia, owner of Community Tree Service. We offer dumpster rentals, tree work, demolition, and free estimates. For any of these services, please go ahead and call my office and either talk to Regina or Naomi at 763-2391. Thank you.
Are trees around your house looking strange, leaning in the wrong direction, blocking your sunlight, in danger of falling? Take care of this and call us, the professionals, Community Tree Service. We're licensed, insured, and bonded. We offer free estimates and are ever ready in emergency situations. We take pride in being reliable and will accommodate your needs with safe professional service and advice. Call our office today at 763-2391 or from Santa Cruz, 426-6340.
Tired of monkeying around with broken sprinkler heads and smelly lawn mowers? Weeds and dry patches make you scream, growling over your decision to put a plant the size of an elephant in the space the size of an African hedgehog? Navigating your way through the maze of gardening and landscaping options and maintenance for your home or office really is enough to drive anybody wild.
Hi, I'm Randy Quilici, owner of Quilici Gardening and Landscaping. If anyone knows it's a jungle out there, it's us. We've been offering complete maintenance and landscape installation for residential and commercial properties since 1982. It's easy to let things get overgrown and out of hand and keep putting off adding that special water feature you've wanted for so long. Let us help by taming and shaping your landscape into something you'll be proud of. Call me at 425-5269 or visit us at QuiliciGardening.com.
Quilici Gardening and Landscaping, because without them, it really is a jungle out there.
Spending time in the great outdoors doesn't have to mean roughing it, especially when you have the latest camping gear from Outdoor World. A lightweight, ultra-comfortable sleeping pad, a weather-resistant tent, or a cozy, warm sleeping bag will make spending time in the great outdoors, well, great. Outdoor World has the latest gear for camping, hunting, or fishing. Check out the new drip coffee maker from Coleman, designed to fit on camp stoves, or the cool and sturdy stainless steel Coleman ice chests. You'll also find camp cookware, cots, lanterns, and accessories. Going fishing? Check out Outdoor World's selection of fishing poles, waders, boots, and tackle boxes. And duck hunters will love Outdoor World's selection of hunting rifles, ammo, gun safes, and camo clothing. With so much gear in one place, you're bound to find what you're looking for, and maybe something a little extra, like time. Shop Outdoor World in Monterey on Fremont Street, on River Street in Santa Cruz, and on 41st Avenue in Capitola. Look for their ad in the Good Times in Monterey County Weekly. Outdoor World. We gear you for adventure.
Hi, this is Nancy Norris with Norris Financial Senior Benefits and Services. I'm here today to introduce you to a new program that we're going to be hosting here on KSCO starting next Monday from 1 to 2. Our show is going to be called Boomer Talk, the program that will be addressing financial issues and elder care issues, estate planning, and anything relative to boomers. The program will have something in it for you. It's call-in talk shows. So remember, our Boomer Talk radio show is every Monday from 1 to 2 on KSCO.
I have a job to be done. It may not seem like a big job to some, but I built this business from the ground up. It's a big deal to me. That's why I went with Granite Construction for my parking lot, retaining walls, and site development. They delivered value and got the work done on time and on budget. That's covering my bottom line.
We have a job to be done. This is our home, and we wanted quality workmanship. We're talking curb appeal. It has to be beautiful. Professional and friendly expertise was what we got from Granite Construction. They've got the people and resources, and they got our job done right away.
This big project at work is important and a big reflection on me. I can't lay awake at night wondering how this job will go, so I called Granite Construction. Granite's people are backed by a culture of workmanship, safety, and quality that I just trust. And they have their own local sources for materials. Take no chances. Go with the best. That's my motto. That's project peace of mind. Call 1-800-GRANITE. What can Granite build for you?
Veterans, attention! And muster at the Capitola Mall with your brother and sister veterans from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and Iraq. Hello, I am Vietnam veteran Michael Olson of KSCO KOMY with an invitation to all fellow veterans to join together in the third annual Flag Day Muster of Veterans, Wednesday, 14 June from 15 to 1800 in the food court of the Capitola Mall. We'll enjoy a flag ceremony from the Boy Scouts, the singing of the Star-Spangled Banner by Miss Santa Cruz County, a presentation of veterans from the wars we have served in, complimentary refreshments from our friends at the Capitola Mall, and we'll dance to the music of Grover Coe. But above all, we'll have the opportunity to meet and greet fellow veterans and see who has the best stories. Bring your family, bring your friends, bring yourself to the third annual Flag Day Muster of Veterans at the Capitola Mall, Wednesday, 14 June. Muster at 1500 hours sharp in the food court for the flag ceremony, then relax and enjoy the refreshments, live music, and company of your fellow veterans. At ease.
Mortgage rates have fallen so far and so fast that you can save big money even if you've refinanced within the past 6 months. I'm Jim Chubb with Pacific Inland, and it's true. Mortgage interest rates have fallen so far and so fast in the past few months that you can save tens of thousands even if you've already refinanced. And here's the kicker. Pacific Inland will refinance you at no cost. Don't miss out on this historic opportunity to save money. Some restrictions may apply, so call Pacific Inland at 475-2600. Pacific Inland. Licensed by the California Department of Real Estate.
Rocky here from Taylor Vision Satellite. If you're considering a satellite dish due to the high cost of cable and poor service and thinking of calling the 800 numbers direct, think again. Answer my phones for one day talking to people that have, and you'll understand why it's best to call Taylor Vision. I get you into the right equipment and programming the first time. With 25 years of experience, I can help. Call 476-1636 or 252-0441.
And back we are here on the Saturday special. Charlie Friedman joining you here in the absence of MZ. I believe he'll be back next week. Before I do anything else, I wanted to say a word or two about Cyril Vitomsky. I had the pleasure of doing his program for several weeks while he was doing some visiting hither and yon here in the United States, and also going back to his roots back in Russia. And I really enjoyed doing it. I'm so glad he's back, and he was very gracious in thanking me on the air when he came back, so I wanted to return the favor and also urge everyone in the KSCO listening audience to be sure to tune in tomorrow at 11 o'clock to the Embassy of the New World Order and your friendly, linguistically challenged ambassador, Cyril Vitomsky, who will cheerfully listen to your opinions about foreign policy and gleefully point out where you are wrong. Get a kick out of his promo announcements. Anyway, Cyril on tomorrow. Don't miss it. Right now, we'll be talking with Millie from Aptos in just a second. There are other open lines. 479-1080 is the phone number. Oh, incidentally, if you want to talk about immigration, we can do that too. Millie, hi. How you doing this morning?
Oh, well, thank you. Speaking of Billy Sunshine,
yeah,
I'll tell you, nobody cuts him off at the great new Coast Station where he will soon be hosting.
Oh, really? I didn't know anything about that.
Well, it's a new thing. I mean, a new event. The station's been there for about 6 or 8 months. I don't know, but a year.
Gracious golly.
Yeah, well.
Go figure.
If
he behaves toward his callers the way he behaved toward me the last time he called up, he's going to be one lonesome polecat.
Not on that station.
Oh, really?
No. Okay, I'm going to move on to the original reason I'm calling you.
Please.
And I find it curious that you brought up McPherson omitting the fact that he saw to it to put Diebold machines in a lot of our state, too many places, without any public hearings or discussions. He just went ahead and did it in light of the fact that there is a national uproar regarding these machines, and rightfully so. And so,
are these the touchscreen machines?
They have two kinds, and both of them are terrible. No receipts, no records, mm-hmm. no nothing. And so, to put that in our state is really bad news. And so,
I would say.
I question whether he was really working for all of us when he did that.
It's a controversial thing. Frankly, I've watched Bruce McPherson in public life for a long time. He's a man of tremendous integrity and ability. And frankly, if he's willing to sign on to these machines, that carries a lot of credibility with me right there. I would point out to you, and you probably already know this, California is not the only state where these machines are being installed. There are a lot of people who seem to think that this touch screen style of voting is something that would encourage turnout or something. Frankly, I would tend to agree with you. I would shy away from it. Right now, what we're using here in Santa Cruz County are these cards where you just fill in a blank. Frankly, that seems to me to be quite straightforward and makes ballots that you can recount and so on and so forth. If I could work my will, you're going to love this. We would go back to bedsheet ballots. Do you know what those are?
No, I've never heard of it.
Okay, a bedsheet ballot is what we had when I was a little boy. It's a great big piece of paper, kind of like the road maps you used to get at service stations. You unfold it and marked out all the races and everything, and you take this little stamp, and you got an ink pad here, and you put an X wherever you want it. Then you refold the damn thing, give it to the election judge. They hand you a little stub off of it and say good day. And you have paper ballots, and they have to be counted by hand. That's how I would do it. And I don't give a damn if you have to wait 2 or 3 days for the election returns. But that way you have a permanent, you've got ballots that you can actually stack up and look at.
Well, we can thank Diebold, which are all over the United States, for all the massive election frauds the last time. They're very easy to tap into, and they're an absolute disgrace. And I still say, regardless of McPherson's past integrity, I do not think he showed integrity when he did this. And I've actually voted for him in the past, so this is my new stance on him.
Well, I don't know that you'll be able to get much satisfaction on the other side because, to my knowledge, I'll be honest with you, I cannot recall who the Democratic nominee for Secretary of State is. I don't have all the lists in front of me.
Unless there's a big uproar brought up at the previous to the election, the new election, I think McPherson will skate past this little glitch in his career.
Well, I think you, and frankly, I disagree with you, Millie. I don't think it's that much of a glitch. I'm not as excited about the Diebold machines as I am about some other things. For example, in the 2004 election, I don't know if you know about this, but you might. You pay attention to things. People were complaining about the vote in Ohio because Ohio wound up deciding the election. Well, Bush carried Ohio.
No kidding.
Bush carried Ohio by 120,000 votes, which is a good solid margin, six figures. If you want to look for a place where there was some interesting stuff going on, look at Wisconsin. Mr. Kerry carried Wisconsin by 11,000 votes. That's less than one-tenth of Bush's margin in Ohio. And about 5 or 6 months ago, in the Chronicle, I noted on page 6 or something like that, that they had done a purge of the voting lists in Milwaukee, which incidentally is a Democratic stronghold and where all and more of Mr. Kerry's margin came from. And they had dropped something like 33%, a full third, of the names off the voting rolls in Milwaukee because people were either dead or had moved away or whatever. It evidently hadn't been done in something like 15 years. So my suspicion is if there was an election stolen anywhere in 2004, that was the smelliest place. But
you should read the latest issue of Rolling Stone.
I can honestly claim I've never read Rolling Stone.
Well, try it. I mean, you know, it's enlightening, to say the least. Well, I have to shove off now. Happy trails.
I'm glad you called. Thank you very much. Have a good one. That's Millie from Aptos. Right now, lines are open if you'd like to join us here. 479-1080 is the phone number to get on the radio and talk about any of these things we've been discussing. We haven't said much about the killing of Abu Marsab al-Zarqawi on this program. I cannot tell you how thrilled and happy I am to see this accomplished, and particularly the way it was done. We were actually able to get decent intelligence through having somebody in Zarqawi's own organization provide information. We didn't just get Zarqawi. We also got a couple of other people that were in that house with him. That house, incidentally, was a trip. I don't know if you saw this or not on television, but they were showing the place where it had been. And I was looking at it with my friend, and he said, "My God, Charlie, look at all that rebar." And I looked, and my God, it looked like a concrete bunker or something. There was the concrete had been blown off, and there was all this steel reinforced rebar there. And I mean, no wonder they dropped 2 500-pound smart weapons on the place. You would take that to get through all this. And in addition to that, simultaneous to the destruction of Zarqawi, there were no less than 17 simultaneous operations undertaken in the Baghdad area, which netted a tremendous amount of intelligence, which now can be used to further devastate the capabilities of these terrorists to work their little miracles in Iraq. I mean, this is truly a red-letter day in the history of Iraqi freedom, which, after all, is the name of the operation we're engaged in there, Operation Iraqi Freedom. That is the bottom line. And we've taken a tremendous step toward it. And the icing on the cake, the real icing on the cake, is in, it comes a day later when we learned that when Iraqis arrived on the scene, they arrived before we did. They arrived first on the ground. And they pulled this clown out and put him on a stretcher. He was still alive. He lived long enough to see American special forces and free Iraqis. And just before he departed for hell, he knew who got him. And frankly, I find that tremendously satisfactory. Gary from, is it Live Oak? Yeah. Hi there. How you doing? Good to talk to you today.
Okay. I agree with Millie on this one.
On the Diebold voting machines?
Correct. And
go ahead, please.
The announcement also, you know, these politicians that make these announcements on a Friday before a holiday. the Diebold had been, decertified by California. It revealed they had installed illegal software for updates on the machines, and,
if they're decertified, then they can't be installed, can they?
Exactly. And McPherson was sending the machine's memory cards back to the Federal Independent Testing Authority for reinstallation. Inspection. And and also in Florida, they discovered that it has an interpreted code, which is supposed to be illegal, and it failed the hack test, which can flip an election if they needed to. But Then they did a massive mock election in which the touch screen, here I'm reading right here from a report, the touch screen machines revealed 10% of them failed entirely with screens freezing and printers jamming. Later reports would reveal that as many as 30% of the machines actually failed. So, and then also he made the purchase before he, you know, before he was holding the holding it back for the, you know, the final test, and he went ahead and made the purchase. So, I really think it was a bad move, and we need paper trails on this stuff, and I don't think we can trust these guys on either side. But I thought it was also a little bit revealing that Millie, who's, you know, out liberal and stands by her positions and so forth, is a McPherson supporter. So I'd kind of like to see a conservative Republican on the air. We got Cyril and you, which are kind of, you know, the Wendell Willkie, NAFTA open border type of guys. And we'd like to kind of get.
I tell you what, the only remaining leftover from the Mossback days would be Pat Buchanan. He is the last Republican I know of who is an old-fashioned America-first isolationist. And I tell you, I was elated when he left the Republican Party. I wanted to see him go because, frankly, the idea that we could still run our foreign affairs in that fashion in this day and age leaves me completely astonished.
I think you're misstating that. You know, I'm a Goldwater Republican.
Oh, well, so am I, for heaven's sake.
Well,
I came aboard.
See, I kind of challenged that a little bit because if you read Goldwater's book With No Apologies.
I have that book.
Okay, well, if you go in there and you look at his appraisal of the Council on Foreign Relations and the Trilateral Commission, which he says is a set up there to, you know, consolidate the powers and seize the control of the United States, we have exactly that with the Packards, you know, locally here and the big foundations and,
at
the same token, we've got, you know, Bush appointing these guys all over the place, left and right. His whole cabinet is stuffed with them.
Gary, I'll tell you what, there's a lot I find there to agree with. I have read that book. I understand what you're saying about these foundations, etc. I have no use for them. I understand what they're attempting to accomplish and so on. And when you criticize President Bush on this regard, I have to say I must go along with you. Mr. Bush, in many ways, has been a tremendous disappointment to me as a conservative because he has not governed as a conservative domestically. I would go no farther than to point out that he's never vetoed a spending bill.
This is not a
president who has dedicated himself as Ronald Reagan did.
Right. Well,
to shrinking government.
Right. Well, what we saw here in California was, you know, that little battle, you know, struggle for central committees and so forth, and we had the, you know, the Firestones and so forth driving out the so-called social, you know, conservatives, and of course their big flag that they were carrying in front of them was fiscal responsibility.
And, no, the big flag they were carrying.
Look what happened.
I disagree. The big flag they were carrying in front of them is we can win an election and they can't.
Well,
and I'll tell you what. You probably are no great fan of Abel Maldonado, but if you had a, you know, down the line movement conservative running in that district, then that nut woman who ran against him would have won.
Well, you look at what these guys are doing, and they're built in. I mean, Cyril's, you know, for instance, Cyril with his program, his most frequent guest is the head of the United Nations Association and, you know, the NAFTA, and he's quoting the, you know, the Financial Times, which is, you know, one of their organs. It goes on to say that there's no such thing as Bilderbergers. They're all a bunch of dead men. And, of course, they're meeting again. You know, they had a Coca-Cola and Kissinger and all the boys. There's a certain amount of actual disinformation that comes from some of the guys out there that are representing themselves as Republicans. But I wish we had a little bit more time, and I appreciate the air.
Gary, thank you very much for calling.
Bye-bye.
I appreciate it. You know, one of the things I love about doing these radio programs, you hear all kinds of views and all kinds of perspectives. And, in some ways, I can share Gary's frustration. I would like to see a more conservative approach to government here in California. And last year, when Governor Schwarzenegger, in my opinion, very badly mishandled the special election, that's why he lost. It was because he did not play it smart. But the measures he put forward, the four measures he put on the ballot, They were terrific, all four of them. And if they had passed, you would see a tremendously better picture here in California in terms of our future fiscal situation, in terms of the kind of interest we'd have to pay on our bonded indebtedness, which would save every taxpayer in this state uncalculated amounts of money. But unfortunately, it didn't turn out that way. And there is so much media in this state. I mean, KSCO is a small market radio station. I mean, you lay us up alongside of, you know, the big stations in Los Angeles and San Francisco. We can't match them either in wattage or in listening audience. There's no way in the world. And those big 50-kilowatt 1A stations are pumping out a steady diet of, you know, Republicans are terrible and they call for what they call it. Some of them, oh, we need to be moderate. Well, their definition of moderate is to the left. There's no question about it, and it's frustrating as all hell. But frankly, I have seen political tides come and go. Right now, the unions and the liberals are riding high in California. That's not always going to be the case. I'm 54, and I will live to see the day when the tide will turn. We have open lines at 479-1080. If you want to join us, please do. That's what Pat did, and here is Pat. Thank you very much for calling.
You're welcome. I think that these voting machines, the electronic voting machines, are outrageously rigged, and there's an awful lot of evidence for that. So, in my opinion, George Bush stole both of his elections in all likelihood, almost certainly, in 2000 and pretty certainly in 2004.
Okay, Pat, you have just gone, particularly with 2004, you've just gone completely off the deep end. But I would remind you that in 2000, the votes in Florida were counted three times. And as you would expect in an honest recount, the results changed almost not at all. And every single one of those three counts showed George W. Bush ahead. At no point did Al Gore lead the Florida count. Now, you can complain about the Electoral College and the fact that Mr. Gore was able to win a plurality of the votes nationally and still lose the presidency. That's happened before.
Yes, I understand.
But
that.
The last time a presidential election was stolen, and it has happened,
that's not what I'm
was in 1876.
About. At any rate, the point I also want to make, and there's a lot of evidence online for anybody that wants to look into Diebold fraud. If you just Google Diebold fraud, you'll see that there's a whole lot more to that story than what you just related. But I would also like to point out here that on the Democratic side, they are trying to recruit illegal aliens as voters, which to me is just as criminal as what the Republicans are doing. So I'm fed up with both of them, and I didn't vote this year for the first time in my life, and I don't intend to vote again until there's a candidate who is no growth. Now, in your mind, this county's probably full of no growth candidates. In my mind, we still are waiting for our first one. All these Democrats are for open borders. How the hell can you have no growth and open borders at the same time? It's a bunch of crap.
Let me ask you something. When you speak about no growth, are you talking nationally or are you speaking locally?
I'm talking globally, nationally, and locally.
Well, the only way you could enforce no growth globally would be to conduct campaigns of mass abortion and genocide. I don't think you're in favor of that.
Well, I think you're putting words in my mouth.
Well, how would you do it?
Well, first off, when you have a problem, and it's a huge problem, and nobody's talking about it, you start talking about it, and then you come up with some kind of a fair implementation. But as long as everybody throws up their hands and go, oh, you can't stop that, that's ridiculous. And if you did stop it, you'd have to do what the Nazis do. So we aren't even going to think about it anymore. Next subject, that's about as far as we get when it comes to known growth.
Well, I asked you an open-ended question. How would you?
And I just got done telling you the first thing we do is start talking about it.
Well,
and then
yeah,
there's plenty of things we can do. We can stop rewarding people for having kids. We can stop congratulating them for having kids. We can stop making people who don't have kids pay for people that do have kids. We can put out the word that when immigrants come to this country with first world appetites and third world birth rates, there's something way out of whack there, and we need to make it real clear to them that it's not in anybody's best interest to have a lot of kids. And there's a mindset amongst a lot of immigrants that by having a lot of kids, they're going to take over. You've heard of Reconquista.
That is a fringe outfit, and yes, I have heard of it, but I'll tell you what, I teach high school at a place where there's a tremendous Hispanic presence. I don't hear that garbage coming out of these young people. Rather, instead, what I see is, people who come here first generation, they do have larger families, not as large as they would have if they were still in Mexico or Guatemala or wherever. But there are economic forces at work that will inevitably, inexorably, and certainly dictate smaller families because here, in a first world economy, as you rightly pointed out, young people don't tend to be as much of an asset as they are a liability in terms of money.
Right. You're talking about the demographic transition. Now, the flaw with that, because you're talking just like a liberal here,
you're being mean now.
Well, you are. I'm not. I don't mean that as an insult, but liberals liberals say the same thing.
That's because it's true. In this particular case, everybody says.
All right, so you're agreeing that.
Well, it's verifiable. Like you look liberal, for. Let me give you an example.
Well, let me just.
You look at Japan right now, and you're going to see a country that's looking forward to suffering depopulation because they don't permit any immigration, and because their birth rates, because of their economic condition and the fact that children are a very expensive thing, their birth rate has fallen so low that it's below the replacement rate.
I understand that their fertility now is 1.25 and. Koizumi says, that we should hit the panic button. Well, here's the thing. Japan is the size of California. It's got over three times the amount of people as California. And it's a very good thing that their population is getting smaller. And, yes, they won't have as many babysitters for their second childhoods. But that is a problem that can be dealt with. And, ultimately, you can't just have a Ponzi scheme, a pyramid scheme going where you constantly have a bigger population on the bottom to support everything on the top. And every generation has to be bigger. That's the ultimate pyramid scheme. Can't you understand that?
Oh, no. I'm willing to drink to that. There's only one problem. If you turn the thing on its head and wind up with population shrinkage, you can carry that to a point where it gets disastrous. Now, you said earlier, no growth. If you're talking about population stabilization, which is what I interpret no growth to mean, then, yeah, and that's something that is going to happen inevitably. It's going to happen after we're dead, but it will happen.
Oh, it may not even be that long. The point I'm making, though, is that, and I think you just agreed, which I'm surprised to hear, the pyramid scam of population growth cannot continue forever. No pyramid scam continues forever.
Yeah, look at Social Security. That's about to come crashing down around our... You know, I'll tell you anybody under 50 who thinks he's going to see a nickel out of Social Security is smoking really strange stuff.
I never thought there was going to be anything in Social Security when I was a young man, and I'm 59 right now. I never thought there was going to be any Social Security. I'm not a bit surprised. A lot of the things that people, oil, becoming expensive, I'm not surprised. The only thing I'm surprised is it took this long to get here. The point though is that a pyramid scam cannot continue forever. Population growth is a pyramid scam and you just agreed to it. So we're in a pyramid scam. How are we going to get out of it? That's what we ought to be focusing on.
See, the difference there is I think you're a lot more proactive than I am. I'm willing to trust to market forces, financial, fiscal forces, and social forces to take care of the problem, where I think you want to get a little more proactive. And when you get proactive on some of these things, you wind up getting into areas that I would hesitate to get into.
Let me suggest, because you've given me a generous amount of time, and I appreciate it.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you've only got another 30 seconds. We're coming up the top of the hour.
I don't even need that much. Let me just suggest, if you ever care to, that you maybe Google Albert Bartlett and also Steady State Economy. And there are alternatives, short of shooting people and all this goofy stuff that is suggested when you talk about stopping population growth, okay?
Okay. Thanks a lot for calling and saying it here, Pat.
Steady State Economy. Thank you.
Have a good day.
You too.
As I say again, all kinds of interesting stuff crops up. We got one more hour left. All the lines are open. 479-1080 is the phone number. Join me in a few minutes here on the radio program. This is KSCO Santa Cruz, back in just a few.
Fun Fox News Radio, I'm Lisa Carton. He's dead, with top terror leader Abu Musab al-Zarqawi taken out. Who might his successor be?
An Egyptian named Abu Ayyub al-Masri is who coalition forces are betting on. Al-Masri and Zarqawi met in Afghanistan. But some militant internet sites are identifying the new emir or leader as Abu Abdul Rahman al-Iraqi. Now, there is some confusion, though, since someone with a similar name died in the airstrike that killed Zarqawi.
Fox News Radio's Mike Makowitz, and we're getting a look at the safe house where Zarqawi was killed.
The latest video from the site shows a pile of concrete rubble with household items scattered around, including a woman's leopard print slip and other see-through clothing.
Fox's Malini Bawa, the U.S. military, says the autopsy report on the terror leader should be released in a couple of days.
It's not going to end the war. It's certainly not going to end the violence, but it's going to help a lot.
President Bush on the killing of that top terror leader.
Instead of transitioning out, President Bush recently sent in more troops to handle the surge in violence.
Senator Harry Reid in the weekly Democratic radio address hailing the death of Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, but calling on President Bush to come up with a plan for U.S. troops to withdraw rather than sending more.
To most Americans, this looks like we're moving in the wrong direction at a time when our national security demands we chart a new course.
Well, a date's been set for a Palestinian referendum on establishing a state alongside Israel. President Mahmoud Abbas announcing today the vote will be July 26. But the vote will only be held if warring government factions can't reach a deal. The ruling Hamas party had pleaded for the vote to be put off as tensions rise in the region. Without delay, Tom DeLay's left Congress, but says he'll remain politically active.
There's not enough voices outside of Congress talking about where the country ought to go.
The Republican's back in Texas today, where he hopes to beat campaign finance charges against him. You're listening to Fox News Radio, fair and balanced.
The following is a KSCO commentary. Here is Kay Swirling.
This is an open letter to Tom Honig and the other editors of the Sentinel News. Several Saturdays ago, something wonderful happened in downtown Santa Cruz. For the second time in 35 years, there was a parade to honor all veterans who served in wars to defend and protect our country or to help other freedom-loving countries who were attacked. The parade was called Not This Time, Vets, an intriguing, bittersweet name to acknowledge the veterans of all American wars. Most of the proud marchers were vets of World War II and the Korean War and all other subsequent wars, and especially those who served in Vietnam. Those Vietnam vets whose negative experiences created the name Not This Time Vets were spit on and otherwise maligned when they returned home. And now they were honored, celebrated, and finally felt redeemed. Kudos to Donna Jacobs for creating the name Not This Time Vets and for spearheading the last two parades and hopefully the future parades, which, by the way, cost $5,800 each time. The public acknowledgement of the bravery of all veterans from the Sentinel was very conspicuous by its absence. By way of mention of the Vets Parade, there was a small picture of a woman in an old-fashioned costume that was featured in a small article hidden away in the back of the newspaper. It was totally irrelevant. Not one picture or word about the parade, which should have been on the front page, and it was not there. How sad. Conversely, I opened the Sentinel yesterday, and lo and behold, the front page was plastered with pictures of joyful antics of the Gay Pride Parade of last weekend. Editors, your duty is always to serve the entire public and not be selective about who and what to promote. It should have been a no-brainer. Why didn't you promote both the veterans and the gays? Instead, for the Sentinel, glorifying gays was important, and ignoring veterans was okay too. Shame on you. You have used and continue to use the freedoms which our veterans fight and often die for us, by giving them the middle finger. Tom, you and the Sentinel broke our hearts, and we thought you were above that. What more is there to say? For KSCO and KOMY, this is Kay Swirling.
www.kseo.com.
And you're listening to KSCO AM 1080. It's 5 minutes, 6 minutes past 11 o'clock. I'm Jay Cruz with a quick look at your Central Coast weather forecast for today. Partly cloudy, drizzle and fog with west winds at 13 miles per hour tonight. Lows around 53. Sunday mostly cloudy. Areas of drizzle and fog in the morning with west winds around 5 miles per hour and highs around 62. Sunday night mostly cloudy, drizzle and fog. Probability of precipitation at 10% with west wind around 10 miles per hour and lows around 50. Stay tuned to KSCO AM 1080 for hour number two of the Saturday special with guest host Charlie Friedman. Stick around.
Up-to-the-minute news and the best in talk, AM 1080, KSCO Santa Cruz, and AM 1340, KOMY Watsonville.
Oh, hello, darling. I hate to hang up on you, but I'm sorry, baby, but I have to go. It's time for that wonderful record show.
One of these days I'd like to do a music show here, but just about everything I have was recorded before this station went on the air in 1948.
I'm sorry, baby, but I really gotta go to KSCO.
Hour number two of the Saturday special begins right now. Charlie Friedman sitting in for MZ. Mr. Swirling, as I mentioned last hour, if you just joined us, has returned to his roots. He is visiting back in New York, where he originally came from. And I don't know what he's doing back there, whether it's business or pleasure. I'm hoping he's managing to mix in a little of both. In the meantime, we've got an hour ahead of us of news talk here at the radio station. Looks like there are a couple of people who know how to read clocks. They're calling in right now. 479-1080 is the number if you want to be one of them. Talk about what you like. Al-Zarqawi, the primary election and the upcoming election in fall. The disarray among the congressional Democrats, which is getting really noteworthy. The immigration issue, you call it. We'll talk about it. And frankly, I kind of enjoy doing a freewheeling program like this when we have the opportunity to talk about all kinds of various things. Anthony is our first caller during the second hour here, and lines are open, 479-1080. Anthony, hi, how you doing?
I'm doing terrific, but the country is not, and I'm concerned that the administration is going to offer the Latino population citizenship for a biochip. In other words, a citizenship 666 mark of the beast. And this is all already underway with the Verachip. It has been suggested by the Colombian president as an answer. This is very similar to the, except modernized, to the tattoo that was put on the Jews in Nazi Germany to identify them.
Now, it's interesting you'd want to talk about the immigration issue. The last caller at the end of the last hour described me as an open borders person. I didn't have an opportunity to take issue with that because we were discussing other things. But no, I am not an open borders person. And I'm sympathetic to what you're talking about here. The idea of putting microchips under people's skin. I mean, we've seen movies where this has been done, and we've all kind of gone, ew, my God, how totalitarian can you get? And I don't see that in our future, although one thing that may happen is a national ID card.
Well, the national ID card, it would be designed not to work so as to allow them to introduce the citizenship. And like I say...
Oh, I see what you're saying. The one would be ineffective, so they'd say, well, we have to take it a step beyond.
Right. So in other words, they can't tell Juan Hernandez from Enrico Gonzalez. So by doing this, by setting this amnesty program up, and that's exactly what it is, through Bush, it will collapse. They say, well, obviously we can't secure the border, so... To make this legal, they will take a citizenship for the identification of the children, of the mothers, the fathers. I've been out in the demonstrations here in Los Angeles and with a microphone and a camera.
Mm-hmm.
And in talking to the illegals, about 30% said that they would, but... That other, and others said
30% said that they would what?
They would take a biochip for citizens.
Oh, okay. I didn't understand. Go ahead.
Yeah. And this is part of this free trade area of the Americans, the FTAA program, which is a treaty which is similar to the one that produced the European Union. And in that paper, they say it is to facilitate the achievement of full hemispheric integration. In other words, the dissolving of national security for the emergence of a one world order. And I say that this chip.
Okay, this is something that, let me come in on that. This is something that neither you nor I would support. On the other hand, the idea of free trade, economic activity across borders, is something I unquestionably support.
Well, this really...
When you extend that, as they did in the EU, to a common currency, I beg your pardon, and an all-European parliament, I'm sorry, I am not on board with that.
They have that currency already designed.
Oh, I understand that they have that over there. I'm not interested in it. I don't want it. And frankly, if any administration, whether it was Mr. Bush or Hillary Clinton or Rudy Giuliani or anybody who might be the next president, any American president who would attempt to bring about such a thing would not succeed, because you and I are in a majority on this. We do not want this kind of integration with other countries, and we would not accept it. I'm not going to worry about it for that reason. It's politically impossible.
Well, I would hope so, that we join together on this issue. And I'm taking a look at this chip, which is very, very similar in nature to the tattoo.
Now, I know what you're talking about there. I'm quite familiar with the Holocaust. I'm not one of these people who denies it.
So what I see here, they had a tattoo for the Jews.
Right, exactly.
This is like a Jew chip, where, except it isn't Jews, it's Latinos, and they would be forced to take this. And when I talking to 30% of them who said yes, when you included, when they would ask the question, well, if this is prejudice, why? For me and not you, if you guys take it, we will take it. Then the number goes from about 30% to about 53%, or a majority of the Latino population, which I believe would be simply used as slave labor for the New World Order.
Boy, that's rather strong language. I will say this, people who come to this country illegally do wind up being an exploited labor force. And frankly, I hope you would join me in saying that we ought to come down like a ton of bricks on people who do that, people who knowingly employ illegals. I would like to see a lot more done on the enforcement end, and I frankly think that if we did that, we'd reduce the incentive a lot of people have to come here. Also, one other thing I would like to say, and this will probably surprise the hell out of Pat, who called last hour. I am very much in favor of securing the border, regardless of what decision we take as to what to do with the illegals who are already here. That's another issue. insofar as securing the border is concerned and stopping the recurrence and continuation of the situation we face, I can't see any debate on that. It must be done. Must.
The citizenship would be used, in, implanted in all of the Latino population coming over here.
See, now, I have a problem with that because there are plenty of people here illegally who aren't Hispanic.
No, but this would be used for employment. So they would mark the individual just like they did in, you know, Orwell's 1984, and then run their hand through the scanner to determine whether they are legal or illegal and employable or not.
I tell you what, if they try something like that, they'll never get it through the Congress and they'll never get it past the American people. That's not something the American people are ready to sign on to. I got another caller. I got to let you go.
Well, thank you.
I want to thank you very much for calling and sharing your views on the radio station today. As a matter of fact, before we move on to our next caller, I want to emphasize that that's exactly what it's all about today. We've had a lot of callers. I like that. I want more. I've only got one guy on hold right now, and I'm going to put him up in a second. So lines are open at 479-1080. Take your piece of the First Amendment here on KSCO. And right now, Steve in Salinas is on the air. Hello, Steve.
Hey, how's it going?
Fine, thank you. The sun is out. I'm a happy boy.
Thank God. Hey, I don't know if you heard this morning. I heard it once, and that was it, on the national news, that the federal government's going to require California hospitals to check citizenships before they pay their share of Medicare? Did you hear that?
No, sir, I did not.
That's what I heard.
See, this is one of the things that we have been remiss in for many years now.
Yeah.
Is if, you know, for example, if somebody gets arrested for being drunk in public or something, or just, you know, minor infractions, they should say, hey, are you here legally? And believe me, the idea of applying this only to Hispanics turns my stomach.
Yeah.
This is not a racially motivated thing. Back when Proposition 187 was being debated, if you're old enough to remember that, back in 1994,
sure do.
The proposal was to deny government benefits to people who were here illegally. And the campaign against 187 did their best to turn it into a race thing. It was never a race thing, and all of us who are concerned with immigration must understand always that there are plenty of people, millions here illegally who are not Hispanics.
Yeah, but my point is, the feds messed up the border, let's face it.
Oh, it's their responsibility. Of course they messed it up.
Our hospitals, the people who work in our hospitals, get the added burden of figuring out who's a citizen. That's crazy.
There's only one hitch. The feds can't be everywhere. The one thing that the feds have not done effectively over the past few years. I was listening to another talk radio program. A caller called and he says, I'm a small businessman. He said, it used to be that if I had somebody apply for a job, there was a number I could call up and, you know, I had to do it. I'm the employer and verify this person's social security number, make sure that they were in the country legally. And he said about 1995 or so, he did this and they got back to him and said, stop making this phone call. You're infringing upon this person's civil rights. We will not tell you whether he's here legally or not.
Yeah,
now,
well,
that was the federal government that undertook that decision. And it has been federal judges, damn their hides, who have driven a lot of this. Most of this has never been done by Congress. In the case of the action that I just described to you, that was an administrative action undertaken by the executive branch of the government. That was an executive decision made during the Clinton administration. Perhaps, I doubt if it was made by President Clinton himself. It was probably made by somebody in the bureaucracy. In the case of a lot of other measures that have been undertaken, like the voiding of Prop 187, that was some damn judge deciding to put his personal opinions ahead of the values of 5 or 6 million, 60% at the voting polls, of Californians, which is outrageous. But you haven't seen much of this kind of thing go through Congress because the congressmen and senators know that the American people don't want it and won't stand for it. Now, thank God, there is at last public debate on this immigration issue. And what you see come out of Congress is not going to be the same kind of thing you've seen come out of the bureaucracy and come out of the judiciary. You're going to see popular input. That's what the Congress is for.
Well,
the American system is going to function here. You mark my words.
I hope the Congress gets together and there's a lot of cross-aisle talk so that they can get a national policy here.
Well, they're going to have to. Now, you know your civics, right?
Little.
The House has passed an immigration bill, and the Senate has passed an immigration bill.
Oh, yeah.
They do not look much like each other. They're very different. The next thing that happens is a conference committee.
Oh, boy.
There will be a few members of the House and a few members of the Senate who will get together, and they will begin to try to reconcile these bills.
Yeah, now, one other thing, and I'll leave you. I heard this morning on one of the business channels or something.
Yeah.
You remember those maquiladoras that were set up under the Carter administration?
Maquiladoras, yeah, sure,
yeah.
I do. Right.
They're all closed down. They're in China. Those factories are empty. So those people who used to come north to work on those things keep going. They were huge magnets, and when they started closing them and sending all that work to China, that only increased the influx. Okay, that's all I have. We'll see you later.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate your call.
All right.
That's Steve in Salinas. I want to thank him for joining us for a few minutes this morning. We'll be taking our next call in a moment on all kinds of issues today. Now we're off on immigration. Maybe somebody else will want to talk about Zarqawi. I don't know. We'll find out. 479-1080 is the telephone number. Lines are open. Liberty, good morning. How you doing today?
Good morning, Charlie.
What's on your mind this morning?
Well, I couldn't listen to you from the beginning of your program.
Oh, shame on you.
I know. Well, I was doing daddy duty, and I had to talk.
Well, that actually is important. You are excused.
Yeah, I was talking to my daughter instead of listening to you. So, but anyway, I tuned in when Pat was on, and that drew me in. But before I get to Pat and population, I heard something on the radio the other day that if I hadn't been driving in my van and firmly strapped into my seat with my seat belt, I think I would have fallen out of my chair.
What was that?
Heard our president talking, and he referred to the illegal aliens who have been living here for a long time. He said, these citizens who have been living in this country for 10 years or more. And I said, what? Our president doesn't even understand the difference between citizenship and being in our country illegally.
Well, on the one hand, I don't blame you for your reaction. You're absolutely correct. On the other hand, I would remind you that when it comes to use of the language and choosing the proper way to express himself, et cetera, George W. Bush is absolutely incompetent. Now, this is, and even his staunchest admirers have to admit that this man is communicatively challenged.
Unfortunately, it's true.
So for that reason, I would tend to discount that. I mean, he obviously misspoke. On the other hand, and this is something that boils back to what I was just telling our previous caller. In this particular case, our process seems to be working the way it was intended, which means that law is not made by the president. And as a matter of fact, Mr. Bush has really not taken that active a role in promoting his own particular agenda for immigration. He has been doing the right thing in that he's been sitting back and letting the Congress, which is where the laws are supposed to be made,
mm-hmm.
actually do its job.
Well,
and for that reason, I don't know. I don't know what the conference committee is going to come up with, to tell you the honest truth. It's going to be a compromise between the Senate and House bills. The House bill coming up with, you know, anybody caught being in the United States illegally is a felon, we're going to put them in jail. That's a non-starter. We can't do it to start with. We don't have the jail space to do that. So that's going to be out. But, you know, there's that thing in the Senate bill where, well, there's, you know, if you've been here 2 years, you've been here 5 years, you've been here 10 years. That's unenforceable. You know, administratively, it'd be a nightmare. That's not going to survive the conference committee. There'll be something else there. But you and I both know that the American people right now are demanding border security. They are demanding that we actually start taking our own immigration laws and our borders seriously. That's going to happen.
Well,
and I'm very pleased about it.
Yeah.
But because it hasn't happened in years. It's something brand new.
Well, yeah, I know, but, you know.
And you can't very well ask other people from other parts of the world to take our immigration laws seriously if we don't.
Yeah.
I mean, the last caller, one thing he said, the federal government has made this mess. He's absolutely right. I don't blame anybody else. We have to look to ourselves, and it's the federal level, not the state or local. It's the federal level that has responsibility to secure the borders. That's who wears the hat. That's where the blame belongs, and they're the ones who have to clean up the mess.
Yeah. It's too bad that something has to reach crisis proportions before it's considered important enough to act on.
Oh, man, are you ever right about that? But doesn't it happen time after time?
Well, in the world of politics.
It happens in people's lives.
Well, that's...
How many times? You personally, if you're honest with yourself, I'm not going to ask you for details. I don't need you to air your dirty linen on the radio in front of God and everybody. But I'll submit to you that there are times in your life when you've let some festering sore fester until it became a crisis situation in your personal life.
Oh, yeah.
You're a human being, goddammit, and that's what we do.
I'm also a procrastinator.
Thank you kindly. My point exactly. So, you know, to say, oh, I wish the political system wouldn't operate that way, well, you know, maybe we ought to replace all these human beings with some other group of organisms that don't operate that way. But as long as we're a country made up of human beings, we're going to have human failings, and that's just part of life.
I just wanted to comment on Pat's call. Before I get off.
Yeah, go ahead. You got a couple of minutes before the bottom of the hour. Go ahead.
I've met Pat, and he's a nice, very sincere guy, and
quite civil.
Yeah, quite civil. But yeah, I said this before. I'm afraid that Pat's preaching to the choir, and if he wants to do something about overpopulation, he should learn Spanish and Arabic. And talk to them.
You know, the one thing I didn't have an opportunity to tell him, and I'll let you go with this. A number of years ago, a man named Paul Ehrlich wrote a book called The Population Bomb.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what, when Pat said, well, people have to start talking about this, and I did make the point, plenty of people are talking about it. He's not the only person to come up with this. And Ehrlich triggered a lot of talk when he put out that book.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that book was like 30 years ago. Ehrlich made a lot of predictions in his book, and if you want a real laugh, go back and pick up that book and read what he had to say about, you know, what the situation was going to be like in the world. And, you know, the milestones he set, 20, 30 years, have all been passed now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's no longer a matter of speculation. We can look at his predictions and what actually happened at that same period of time. And the man is farther off base than Michael Moore. I mean, he's a 14, judging by what he wrote in his book and what actually happened in the world, he's a 14-carat raving loony.
Yeah, well.
And the thing is, the forces of economic reality are going to solve this problem, have already solved it in parts of the world. In the United States of America, we have population stabilization. The only other thing, we have immigration. We've still got people coming in all the time.
Right.
We can deal with that.
Right.
But insofar as our Native American population is concerned, by Native American here, I mean, you know, people who are citizens, we already have population stabilization.
Right.
They have it in Europe.
Right.
But
well,
the problem is that the industrial economies we have are still demanding additional labor. And where does that come from? It's coming from places where there are excesses of people. So we have a flow of human beings from where they're not needed to where they are needed. The problem is we also have established cultures in certain places. We have an American culture here. And when you get so many people from so many other places all arriving at once, our culture tends to get diluted, or we perceive it as being under attack, and it's up to us to defend it. There were as many people of foreign birth here as a percentage of the population 100 years ago as there are today. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
It's a fact. During Teddy Roosevelt's administration, the percentage of foreign-born in America was about 15%. That's what it is today.
Hmm.
And in those days, there was no such thing as an illegal alien because there was no law against immigration.
Hmm.
People were coming from, of course, in those days, it was mostly Eastern Europe, Italy, places like that.
Mm-hmm.
They came over on the boats. They went through Ellis Island. If you didn't have some disease, they had particular diseases they'd turn you away for.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, it was come what may. And we had a million people a year coming in. And there was no prohibition against it. Just, you know, hey, America's open. You know, the words on the base of the Statue of Liberty at that time, people took that stuff literally. And Teddy Roosevelt came out and made statements about it. He said, anyone who wants to come here can be an American. That's what makes this country unique. If you want to come here and be an American, then be one. Renounce your allegiance to other countries and be an American. That's the key.
Right.
And we have to insist on that. We have to insist on that.
Yeah. You know what God's first, very first commandment to man was? be fruitful and multiply.
Yeah, and now we don't want you to do that anymore.
And we have kept that commandment undoubtedly better than any of the others. But there might be a very good reason for that, and not only economic forces are going to take care of our population, but very possibly natural forces. In that, you know, there still just might be a big old asteroid out there with our name on it.
Well, it happened 250 million years ago, and it happened 65 million years ago. Maybe we're due. Listen, I got to let you go.
The more people there are on the planet, the better chance we have of surviving.
True enough.
Okay.
Thanks for calling, Liberty. I appreciate it.
See ya.
You have yourself a good day. We've got a couple of callers on the line. We'll be getting to them in just a couple of moments. We're going to take our half-hour break here. I'm Charlie Friedman. This is the Saturday Special on KSCO.
Hello, all you beautiful people. This is your friend, Judy DeVilbiss. I would like to speak to you about some red warning lights. When you see a school bus, this bus stops, the red lights flash, that means stop. School bus, red flashing lights, stop. When you get up in the morning and you have an ache in your neck, achy fingers, a sore back, those are red lights flashing at you. Well, I want you to stop exactly what you're thinking and what you're doing. Pick up the phone and call me at 888-352-7500 and let me help you stop your red light from flashing. Now remember, two safety tips. School bus, red lights flashing, stop. Achy neck, achy joints, any aches and pains, stop. Pick up the phone and call me. 888-352-7500. That's 888-352-7500. Do it now.
J.C. Heating and Air Conditioning was started in 1975 by John and Carol Hadley. I'm Chris, and when you call J.C. Heating, I'm the guy who's going to come over to your home and explain your new heating system, air conditioning, and indoor air quality appliances. The secret to J.C. Heating's success in the Monterey Bay Area for 30 years? We offer safety, comfort, and value. Pretty basic. If you're building or remodeling, or just want to get rid of your old inefficient furnace, call us at 831-475-6538. Want to know the latest in high-efficiency heating and cooling? Call me. Trouble with your ducting? Those critters will get in if you don't watch out. Call JC Heating. We want to hear from you. And for those of you who suffer from asthma or allergies, ask about our perfect air purifier. JC Heating and Air Conditioning. Regular people. I'm Chris, a regular guy who wants to get in your house and fix it. Call us at 831-475-6538. JC Heating, 475-6538.
Helicopters for a day or helicopters for a lifetime? We got it right here at Specialized Helicopters.
Ever dream of flying a helicopter? Maybe you'd just like to go for a ride. Today's the day at Specialized Helicopters in Watsonville. Owner, Chief Pilot, Chris Gallardi.
Every day is a good day to go fly. So why not take advantage of that? Have some fun.
Watch the TV segment from the Travels with Romney TV show at TravelsWithRomney.com or visit SpecializedHeli.com. Specialized Helicopters at the Watsonville Airport and 24/7 at TravelsWithRomney.com.
Big changes are coming to KSCO, ladies and gentlemen. The upcoming retirement of Phil Hendry means that weekdays from 4 to 7 p.m., our schedule will soon change. For years, we have been primarily a syndicated program radio station with some local shows. Now we plan to become a primarily local program radio station with some syndicated shows. So, starting immediately, we will be opening up our primetime schedule to more individuals and businesses who want to produce and broadcast their own talk shows on KSCO AM 1080. Our 10,000-watt blowtorch signal can be heard from north of Sacramento to south of Bakersfield in the daytime. Got something to say? A business or ministry to grow? A cause to advance? A candidate to get elected or a voter's initiative to get to pass? Become a talk show host on KSCO and make things happen. For info on rates and schedules, send an email to me, mz@ksco.com, or call my voicemail at 429-2200. That's 429-2200.
Hi, I'm Dr. Guy Peabody. If fear is preventing you from seeing the dentist, listen to how we've helped others with sedation dentistry.
Hello, I'm Pat. I've had probably 40 years of dental drama and trauma, and usually I would go in for a dental procedure only when it was an emergency. Probably had about a dozen different dentists. None of them were painless. I would quit. I wouldn't follow up my procedures, and it would lead from one disaster to another. I would highly recommend Dr. Peabody to anybody that has any tension or apprehension about a dentist. He's the man, and I'm a true believer.
We've helped hundreds of people wake up to a beautiful smile. Let us help you, too.
Call Dr. Guy Peabody at 457-0343. That's 831-457-0343. Find Dr. Peabody's sedation dentistry on the web at drpeabody.com or in the Yellow Pages. You too can wake up to a beautiful smile.
Hello, I'm Robert Stangerl. Many Santa Cruzans know me as Big Boy. The original Stangerl family has been in business since 1879. Our name stands for quality, quantity, and great service. Howard Gilda's restaurant on the Santa Cruz Municipal Wharf is still the fishing headquarters for the area. It's where fishermen gather every morning for coffee and breakfast before heading out on the bay. Stop by Gilda's and say hello. Both Gilda and my son Dino look forward to meeting you at Gilda's at the center of the Santa Cruz Municipal Wharf.
May I have your attention, please? The Capitola Mall and KSCO KOMY cordially invite you to attend a very special Flag Day celebration of area veterans. Wednesday afternoon, June 14th from 3 to 6 p.m. in the food court of the Capitola Mall. You'll enjoy a flag ceremony from the Boy Scouts, the singing of the Star Spangled Banner by Miss Santa Cruz County, and a special presentation of representative veterans from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and Iraq. There will be free refreshments, compliments of our friends at the Capitola Mall, and there will be live music with Dizzy Burnett and Grover Coe from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. But above all, you'll have the opportunity to meet area veterans and personally thank them for giving up so much of themselves for us. Bring your family, bring your friends, bring yourself to the 3rd Annual Flag Day Muster of Veterans at the Capitola Mall Wednesday, June 14th. The flag goes up at 3 p.m. sharp in the food court, and the refreshments, live music, and company of your veterans will run till 6 p.m. in the afternoon. Thank you.
Our final half hour on the Saturday special today, Charlie Friedman sitting in for MZ. We have one caller on the line that we'll be getting to in just a moment. I noticed that Steve in Watsonville dropped. If you want to call back in, we'll get you on. I did want to take a second. Of late, there's been a little bit of controversy generated by Ann Coulter, who puts herself forward as a conservative political pundit, as a person. Myself, I consider myself a conservative. I'm a Goldwater man. I enjoy Rush Limbaugh. I enjoy Michael Medved and people like that. Those are people I like. Even when I don't agree with Rush Limbaugh, I think he has a responsible program. But then again, there's somebody like Ann Coulter. And frankly, if you're a conservative, you need to distance yourself from this person. She's bad news. Asa, thank you very much for your patience. How are you doing today?
Well, I'm just sitting here aghast at all the optimism. I'm always cheerful when you're on because you're cheerful, and I like the fact that you're so optimistic, and that you think the system is working. We had six people running with no opposition in our particular county. I mean,
I spoke to that. I don't know if you were listening at that moment,
maybe.
But I mentioned that, and I found that appalling.
Horrendous.
Not only that, Asa, but did you notice that almost all of them did not get elected to their jobs? They were appointed when a vacancy occurs, like if the current, the sheriff, he resigned, and then the Board of Supervisors picks a new sheriff, and at the next election, you have this appointed sheriff running as an incumbent with no opposition. Now, the fact that all of those county offices this last time, every single one, was unopposed is revolting.
I don't know whether that speaks to great lack of ambition on the part of the population or lack of opportunity on the part of the population.
I think a lot of it speaks to political homogeneity in the county. If you're going to run for political office, you don't do that unless you have a reasonable expectation of actually winning. And I believe that was the perception, that people simply didn't do it because they felt there was no point in it. And the only way there's ever going to be a point in it, somebody has to take these people on.
They're probably, but what I really want to talk about,
yeah,
the thing that I find so horrifying about all, I mean, mind you, I love optimism, but I think I find horrifying is all these statutes that we never get a chance to vote on. No, nobody knows anything about it. And little bureaucrats here and there, little groups of commissions and this and that, make statutes, and they become law, or they have the weight of law, and we're we have to obey these laws. Of, I don't know, clean air. They've got all kinds of. The most recent one I wrote down and I lost the name of it had to do with going to prevent us from being able to buy our vitamins. It's not a law. It's not the one I got to vote on. It's a statute that the damn food and drug people passed to prevent the people from doing what they damn well please.
It's a problem. It's a problem. The only way to address it is through legal action. The Congress can overrule government bureaucracies.
But the statutes, practically nobody has a handle on it. These commissions and people, they have in bureaucracies, they have a bottomless pit. And there's, an individual would never have a chance to fight one of these things.
No, not as an individual. You have to band together and organize.
Well, I know, but you band together and organize, it takes a thoroughs with all that money.
Plenty of vitamin users in this country.
And also, they're trying now to, I don't know whether they've passed in California or not, they're trying to fix it so that the people can no longer get anybody to hire on as signature gatherers for our propositions easily. Because it's some kind of a law that will limit the ability. I mean, make it practically impossible for citizens to get our proposition together. Not to mention the money, but even after you got the money, to make it possible to get the people to do what you want them to do.
See, that one ain't going to fly. And
well,
the awful part of it is, years ago, it was Artie Samish who raised the number of signatures it takes to get a measure on the ballot. But the ability to raise those signatures with professional, paid signature gatherers is about the only thing right now that forces any responsibility in California. Our legislature has absolutely abdicated its responsibilities.
The assemblywoman down south has it on her, bonnet to get that changed, so it's practically impossible once you get, even if you get the signature gatherers, that they have to, so I don't know how many hoops you have to have.
Well, I'll tell you what. Be of good cheer, because even if our pinhead legislature passes such a thing, Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger will cheerfully veto it.
I hope, my love, that you are correct.
Bet on it. Listen, I got a couple of other people on the line.
I'll let you go.
Thanks a million. It's Asa giving us a call today. We have two calls. We'll take them in the order in which they arrived. Ralph, how are you doing today? Hello, Ralph. Are you there?
Yes.
What can we do for you today? Thank you for calling.
Can you tell the audience about the Mexico's Reconquista plan?
No, I've heard about that. There are a small number of people. It's an Aztlan type of thing. What they're saying is that the United States of America stole the Southwest. Not just California, but Arizona, New Mexico, Utah, Nevada, and Colorado from Mexico, and they want it back. And it is an absolute non-starter. If you're going to bed at night and having nightmares about this, I would advise you to sleep easy. It's not going to happen.
Well, Charlie, the last two presidents of Mexico have made it clear that they're pursuing this plan. And during the mid-1990s, Jose Osuna, who was the consul general of Los Angeles representing Mexico, he clearly stated on a television show, which I watched, that Mexico plans to reconquer the Southwest United States with their overpopulation of poor and dominate this area. And I don't see how you can say that it's a small number of people when it's the Mexican government's policy.
Well, first of all, there may be people in the Mexican government who think that way. I've never heard that come out of Vicente Fox. What I have heard come out of him is that he views the United States of America as a place for his country to dump its surplus population. This has been Mexican government policy for many, many years. We Americans have the ability to force a stop to that. And we have finally awakened the necessity of doing that. There's going to be legislation in the not-too-far-distant future, part of which will be resecuring the border. It has to be because the American people are demanding it. Insofar as the Reconquista movement is concerned, when people come here from other countries, and once again, I've said this before, I'm going to say it again, illegal immigrants come from everywhere, not just Mexico. And if I were a Mexican-American, a citizen of the United States of Mexican descent, I would be fed up to here with everybody looking at me and figuring, oh, you're a wetback. That is just plain bananas. But when people from Mexico and other countries come here, they inevitably begin a process of assimilation. It's not something that the government has to mandate, although we can say, hey, you have to complete a course in civics, you have to learn the English language, and I believe we should do those things. But true assimilation is on a cultural level, and it's something that happens inevitably and inexorably. You have to have a little more confidence in it than that. Again, I would say to you, I've got a couple more calls here. I got to let you go. But don't go to bed every night and have nightmares about Reconquista. Ain't going to happen, Captain. And thanks very much, Ralph, for giving us a call today. I do appreciate it. Let me see. We need to say hello to Steve in Watsonville. Steve, how are you today?
I'm fine. How are you?
Excellent. Thank you.
I want to congratulate you for introducing yourself as a Goldwater conservative.
Oh, Barry was the guy who brought me into the party. I was in eighth grade when he ran for president. Well, I still remember very well. My parents were for Rockefeller in the Republican primary, primarily because they felt he would be more electable. But of course, in 1964, there was no Republican who was going to win after in the shadow of the Kennedy assassination. I remember when Goldwater was nominated, and I was, you know, my family didn't feel that good about it. I was only in eighth grade. Where's an eighth grader get his ideas? Well, I went down and I picked up Goldwater literature at the Republican headquarters. And I took it home and I started reading it, and it was my political awakening. It really was. Here was a man who was saying the things I believed, the things I thought. Here was a man who was standing for freedom, standing for liberty, standing against conformity. And I was absolutely captivated. And I to this day, of all the Americans who've lived during my lifetime, the one I admire most is Barry Goldwater.
Well, good for you. And that is the segue into the real reason I called. I love Ann Coulter. And
then sleep with her, but don't put her on television.
She is one of the few conservatives out there that is taking the left on with their own ammunition. And I think every conservative should be standing up and applauding her.
I disagree, and I'll tell you what. If I were George Soros or some other enemy of human freedom, I would find people like Ann Coulter and Michael Savage, and I would bankroll them, and I would put them up before the American people and say, see this? This is a conservative. This is a person who, and you know, Ann Coulter wrote a book in which she attempted to rehabilitate Joe McCarthy.
Well,
this is just plain bananas. The one thing in politics you have to do, whether you're coming from the right or the left, if you wish to maintain your credibility, you've got to own your mistakes. And mistakes come from both sides.
Joe McCarthy was right.
Joe McCarthy was right in that there were communists in the government. On the other hand, the way he went about attempting to expose them was ludicrous. He went around making charges, defaming people's characters. Do you know how many communists Joe McCarthy actually discovered in government and actually put the B on? The answer is zero.
Actually, it was over 300.
No.
He claimed there were 87. There were over 300.
But he never identified any of them. For one thing, he was too busy being drunk to do anything that responsible.
No.
We have one example of a Republican, it was a congressman at that time, Richard Nixon, who actually found, unmasked, and saw prosecuted Alger Hiss. That was an effective, responsible operation.
Joe McCarthy
saw that, and he was preparing to run for re-election in Wisconsin. He wanted an issue, and he said, hey, why don't I climb this communist in government thing? The number of communists he claimed in the government changed every time he spoke. One time it was 203, one time it was 87, one time it was 176.
He never claimed more than 87 at first, and it did go up to over 300.
When he first gave the speech in Wheeling, West Virginia, it was Lincoln Day, February 12th, 1950. Wheeling, West Virginia, Lincoln Day gathering of Republicans, 203 was the number he claimed.
No, I've never heard that.
I've okay, I look, this is the kind of thing I pay real close attention to. But what I would urge you to do a little more research on this. But in particular, bear in mind that Joe McCarthy did more than any other person to discredit the cause of anti-communism in America. If Joseph Stalin had wanted to damage our republic worse than in the worst possible way, he would have sent Joe McCarthy. Because McCarthy, by his crazy conduct, succeeded in making anyone who was interested in ferreting out or discovering subversion and espionage and communist influence in government, made them all look foolish. He performed a tremendous disservice.
No.
I
think you're upside down in this issue, and maybe you should go back and reread history. Because I have read it. I have read it closely because I had to start in college with all the arguments against him. And I've gone through the years, and I've read, and I've dug, and I've dug. And Joe McCarthy was one great American who had a very great cause, only undermined by those like Eisenhower and the rest who could have been on the page of the names he had listed.
Well, I'll tell you what, Steve. I got to let you go right now, but I got another guy who's calling up who also wants to defend Ann Coulter, so we'll see what he has to say.
Good enough. Thanks.
Thank you very much for calling. Always reminds me, Robert Welch, the head of the John Birch Society in the 1950s, was saying that President Dwight David Eisenhower was a conscious agent of the communist conspiracy. Ladies and gentlemen, when you get that far out, you got serious, serious problems. Ken in Carmel, welcome to the program. I'm glad you called.
Well, I'm going to defend Ann Coulter. We need a lot more like her.
Why would you say that? Don't you? Just a sec, Ken. Hang on a second. Let me ask you this. Don't you think, I mean, the reason I don't care for her is because I perceive her as being counterproductive. I believe she makes the average person who's, the elections are decided in the center by people who are swayed one way or the other. Ann Coulter is the kind of person who drives people away. She doesn't pull people
That's
towards.
That's nonsense.
It is not nonsense, and I'll tell
Ann
you
Coulter
what. I have had
wonderful.
The opportunity over the
has
past.
A hell of a following. Every man in America would date her. Are you going to tell me she's rising against conservatives? Wake up.
I'm sorry. I'm going to say precisely that to you, Ken, because she is so over the top in her characterizations.
Disagree 1,000% and disagree with you about McCarthy 1,000%. Have you read Buckley's two books on McCarthy?
Haven't read Buckley. Read Roy Cohn.
Roy Cohn is a very discredited drunk. Who was a closet homosexual who died of AIDS. Why don't you read Buckley? Now, there's a good man. I'm sure you'll agree with that.
Okay, but Cohn was much closer to McCarthy, after all.
Books were.
Cohn was much closer to McCarthy, after all.
Doesn't make any difference.
You know who else worked with
McCarthy?
You know who else worked with McCarthy?
Robert Kennedy.
Thank you very kindly. Now, what kind of recommendation is that? Robert Kennedy was one of the most ruthless people to come down the pike in years.
I'm going to tell you, you read Buckley's two books. The first one is called McCarthy and His Enemies, which came out only a few years after the Tidings Commission, in which they beat McCarthy up so bad, they were so unfair. Tidings might as well have been in the show trial in Russia the way he handled McCarthy. And what happened to McCarthy is the same thing that's happening today with the liberal press and the Democratic Party beating George Bush down.
The only difference there is that George W. Bush hasn't done anything in the world to justify it.
Well,
he has never committed any egregious acts. He's never abused.
There's another book by Buckley that came out in 99. After his first one, it's called The Red Hunter, and it's a novel, and it's a wonderful read.
Well, I'd rather stick with the first one. I'll have to look for that.
Because you're a mile off on two really good people. Thank you very much, Charlie.
Have a good day, Ken. You know, it's fascinating. You come in here and you run into people who are actually wanting to rehabilitate McCarthy. Yeah, McCarthy died of cirrhosis. Now, he characterized Roy Cohn as an alcoholic. Cohn probably was, although he wound up, as the gentleman pointed out, he did die of AIDS. That's true. McCarthy died of cirrhosis. You don't get cirrhosis unless you are a serious, serious alcoholic. Barry Goldwater, in a couple of his books, reminisced about, you know, he was in the Senate in those days. He actually talks about times when he and other Republicans would attempt to try to get some kind of control over and, you know, some kind of rapport going with McCarthy. They couldn't do it because he'd always managed to sneak a bottle along. Let me see. We've got Bill on line one. And other than that, open lines, 479-1080 is the number if you want to call. Bill, good morning.
Yeah, have you ever heard of the Stasi?
Sure, that was the secret police of East Germany.
And have you ever heard of the Venona Papers?
Absolutely. Those were papers, among others, that when the Soviet Union fell, came to light and gave us absolute concrete proof of all along of something that we had known, if we had any sense, that people like Alger Hiss and Harry Dexter White and were communist agents, and that Whitaker Chambers was right and was telling the truth.
And Alger Hiss was, what was his position in the government?
Hiss was, as I recall, in the State Department. He was also one of FDR's right-hand men at Yalta.
That's right. That's right. He was head of the State Department.
Well, not head of it, but he wasn't head of it, but he was very high up in it. Harry Dexter White was very high up in the Treasury Department.
And he was an agent for Stalin, correct?
Absolutely. There's no question.
So how many people do you think he put in the government at that time while he was head of the bureaucracy he was dealing with?
Just a second. Don't get me wrong. Don't have me saying there weren't communists in the U.S. government. I know there were.
I'm just saying.
I know there were.
How many bureaucrats do you think he put in the government while he was in there?
As many as he could. As many as he could. I understand the reality of Soviet communism as it operated at that time. I am not some kind of a useful idiot. What I am saying to you is that if your ideas of defending McCarthy, in the way he went about things, succeeded in discrediting his own cause. That's the problem. The cause of anti-communism is one which I wholeheartedly endorse. That cause was damaged by McCarthy rather than promoted. It was promoted by Richard Nixon when he unmasked Alger Hiss, when he actually did the investigative work, found the papers, got the evidence, put the man on. The man wound up going to trial and being convicted of perjury and serving 5 years in jail. And, you know, Hiss lived to a ripe old age. He always said, I was innocent. Well, we know damn well now that he wasn't. He was a liar. He was a liar in addition to everything else. But communists are all liars. That's part of what they do.
Yeah, that's correct. That is correct. I'm just saying that, you know, we do, if you look at our government and how the bureaucracy's going, it's heading to socialism. Do you concur with that?
It goes back and forth. During the 1980s, it went away from socialism. And if we could get another man like Ronald Reagan in the White House, we could get that again. My guess is that one of your severest criticisms of George W. Bush would be his sponsorship of that prescription drug benefit for Medicare.
I think Homeland Security was a joke too, making another bureaucracy. We got too many bureaucracies. But I think Hollywood at that time when McCarthy was going through, I believe they demonized him. They may have drove him to drink for all we know, right?
No, he was an alcoholic prior to that time.
Yeah, he was. We do know that he was onto something though, correct?
Yeah, and absolutely incapable of doing it properly. I don't know whether it was because of his alcoholism or because of his personality. Quite often personal characteristics are very important in these things. Maybe he just was of the improper temperament. But one way or another, I will tell you this. He did more than any other person in this country to discredit the cause of anti-communism that you and I both hold dear.
Well, I believe he's been demonized since that time. I think he was probably demonized at that time. And I think if you've ever had anything to do with the media,
Bill,
they can make anybody look like an ass.
Bill, in all fairness, I will disagree with you, and I'll give you concrete examples. They tried to demonize Ronald Reagan, and they couldn't do it. They demonized Newt Gingrich, not in the sense that he was immoral or something like that, but because of his political misjudgments, they were able to characterize him as somebody who was outside the mainstream. Mr. Bush today has a problem with being demonized because Mr. Bush has such such poor political skills that he's practically unable to defend himself. But if you come up with somebody who is a competent politician and who, with proper policy ideas, again, Ronald Reagan's the best example I can think of. The left can go after him, try to demonize him, and they do, and they will. That's the way they are.
Well,
but you don't. If somebody comes after you and says he's going to hang you, you don't hand him a rope, which is exactly what Joe McCarthy did.
Well, Reagan had a podium to work off of too. I don't think
so. Joe did McCarthy? He had tremendous amount of public attention.
He had attention, but I think they could. Like I said, I think the media can spin whatever they want you to look like. And of course, they've demonized him. They've never brought up the Venona papers. And what that has shown as far as the communist infiltration in the government, and I'm no John Bircher, but
no,
I think even before that time, there was, what was it, after...
Hey, look, I hate to do this, but I got 10 seconds left. I got to go.
All right, bye-bye.
Thanks for your call, Bill. Wow, interesting program. Listen, I got to get out of here. This is KSCO Santa Cruz. It is noon. Stay tuned to Talk Radio for the Monterey Bay and Salinas Valley.
Fox News Radio, I'm Ellen.